everyone, and welcome to Open the Pod Bay Doors. I will be your host today. It's Ian Gardner here, if you don't know me. Welcome along. Today on the show, we have Andrew Nunn. Now, Andrew is the Chief Entrepreneur of South Australia, which is a pretty glamorous sounding role. Apparently has zero pay, so it's sort of an oxymoron being Chief Entrepreneur and zero pay, but we do talk about that and get into it. He's a lovely guy, a successful entrepreneur, as you'd expect, and really, really passionate about South Australia and everything that's going on there. So yeah, if you don't know much about South Australia, keep listening because there's a lot to know. So it's a good conversation. What else? Just on the South Australia thing, Innovation Bay is launching our angel investment group called Horizon 6 Degrees there. And we've still got a few spots open. So if you are an angel investor or interested in finding out more, drop us a note. Samantha is the woman that you want to get in touch with. And she's on samantha@innovationbay.com. So get in touch there. We've also got a few open roles that we're hiring. Innovation Bay has gone from, I think, 4 people this time last year to 9 right now, with another 3 coming. We're here to support the startup ecosystem across the country, all the way from, you know, seed stage founders to, you know, late stage VCs. So yeah, if you're interested in finding out more and seeing if you want to work with us, then check out our website. I think it's on LinkedIn, or follow us on Twitter. You'll find most things there. I think that's all I've got to say this time. So let's jump over to the show and hear my interview with Andrew. All right, welcome to the show, everyone. I am sitting here in my bedroom in Bondi Junction, and I'm staring at Andrew Nunn, who is joining us all the way from Adelaide. So welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
Now, Andrew is the Chief Entrepreneur for South Australia, which is a pretty cool title. So I thought I'd maybe start with the easiest question. What is the Chief Entrepreneur and what do you do?
Well, Chief Entrepreneur, my role is effectively to advise government, and I've got an entrepreneur advisory board. Our role in general is to advise government on policy that makes it easier to take research all the way through to commercialization, and just to make things easier for entrepreneurs in general in this state. The role of chief specifically is about promotion of entrepreneurs, promotion of all the things that we need to do to try and build the ecosystem here quicker and faster and smarter. It's a working with government, but it's working with industry, and it's working with entrepreneurs and researchers. So it's quite an encompassing role. Yeah. To be honest, it's a lot more encompassing than I thought when I first took the job. So I'm not quite sure I allocated quite enough time to it.
But yeah, because you're not long in the role. Is it 4 months? So just this year?
Yeah, 4 months. Just 4 months. So I started in February this year. So it's taken me a while to really get my head around what I need to do. I'm starting to identify now where I need to try and remove roadblocks and make things smoother and easier. I mean, it's a journey. So Jim Wally was the previous chief entrepreneur, and he was the first one in the state. So I've taken over from him, and he's done an enormous amount of work to get it to this point. My role now, in my mind, is to take it from here and then really kick it to the next level. The appointment's a 2-year appointment, typically. And so the role is quite it's a valuable one, because you can have a real impact I hate using the word ecosystem, but it's exactly what it is. It's a whole group of people from different areas and different backgrounds and different ideas, and trying to get them all to work together. So you can have a real impact on that ecosystem. I spent about 4 months or listening and talking to people. Had a lot of coffee in that time, to be fair. But now it's about really starting to work at a policy and a strategic level as to what we need to do. Yeah. I had the entire board spend Saturday a couple of weeks ago working out what the goals are of the Entrepreneur Advisory Board. What are we actually trying to achieve? Because I think we sort of got lost in the rush of getting it moving, and I think we lost a little bit of the vision as what we're maybe not the vision. The vision's there. It's the role to getting there, which is what I'm trying to really articulate, so that I can actually measure what we're doing. I can I can set a path and set some milestones, and it's the engineer in me. I really need to be able to identify what we're trying to do, have a goal focused, break it down into segments and activities, and then sort of execute those.
Yeah, because that was my second question there, Andrew, which is like, you know, what does success look like? How do you define success? With, you know, if you're 2 years in and you're looking back, like, what's worked?
Well, yeah, I mean, in my mind, I gave a talk at South Start. I'll answer your question around about why. I gave a talk at South Start where I said, being a founder can be quite a lonely existence. So I think what I'm finding in my thinking at the moment is I'd like to try and team up some people. I'd like to team up, if you like, a grown-up and a startup. And I think I'll get much better sort of traction with the impact that I'm trying to have in terms of getting people to work their way through the what is taking an idea all the way through to, you know, a client and then a commercialization of that. And so I think there's a lot of mentorship along the way, and that mentorship is just a bit too random in my thinking. I'd like to try and pair people up a bit more because there are ups and downs in this journey quite a lot. Some people have more ups and downs than others, but the plan would be to try and create a safety net and a capability around that. So when you get the hard knocks, you've got some sort of wise heads around you to help support you through that. And then you don't chuck in the towel. We just sort of, you know, dust ourselves off, pick ourselves up and go again. And that's a real thing about being an entrepreneur. You're going to get your knocks. You're going to get your problems. But I think there's a lot of good people around with experience, and I just really want to try and tap into that. I want to couple that with trying to solve big problems in the state. I want, and so I just want to try and get entrepreneurs with great ideas, with guys and girls who have started their own businesses and done some amazing things over the last sort of 5, 10, 20 years, and sort of have them as a mentor type arrangement to just give us a much better success rate all the way through. So my metric of success is ultimately how many ideas I can get, whether they come out of research or whether they come out of somebody having a shower in the morning and the brainwave hits them. How I get as many of those into a system whereby it's a controlled process of development of the idea, testing of it, proving it up, and then supporting it, ultimately getting it a client, and then sort of putting resources around it and then growing it through to a commercialized outcome and ultimately a scaled commercialized outcome. Yeah. So that's how I measure it. That's how I'm trying to get.
And Andrew, is the engineer in you going to put sort of, are you being asked to put hard numbers around it in terms of?
Not really. Certainly not at this stage. I think we're building lot 14 at the moment, and we're at about 1,150 people. So we're at capacity at the moment. It's worth noting though, lot 14, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later, but it's just a relatively new innovation precinct.
It's basically the old hospital that's been converted to the startup hub. Is that?
It's 100% right. Yeah. So about 3.5 years ago, where I'm sitting now, you could have had your appendix out. Now there's 1,000 people here, all sort of working on their startups and scales ups with stone and chalk here. So it's a fantastic, it's an amazing turnaround for a building. It's a beautiful building. It's in the middle of the city. But what the vision of this site as it grows out and it takes over the 7 hectares, and we end up with a $200 million Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Centre there, which is just amazing. I get your viewers to or your listeners to have a look at that online. It's just going to be fascinating. And then there's a 17-storey entrepreneur and innovation building going in behind us right now. The demolitions happen, so that's the government's committed to that. So there's just so much happening on Lot 14 itself. But it's important we don't forget Lot 14 is part of a whole broad innovation district in South Australia and in Adelaide specifically. So, you know, you've got Tonsley down south and Technology Park up north. You've got the biomedical precinct in the inner west and now Lot 14 in the inner east, Waite campus in the inner southwest. So all of these things are there. And they're all co-located with research and tertiary institutions. So it's just such a fantastic network of innovation and entrepreneurship. And so really my job here is to sort of take that amazing infrastructure and make sure the investment that's been made in infrastructure is coupled with the investment in knowledge and investment in research and collaboration to actually get some real outcomes out of this enormous, you know, financial investment.
Yep. I wanted to ask about Steve Marshall. I mean, he's pretty passionate about this. He's obviously the South Australian Premier. We were down in South Australia, in Adelaide, 2 weeks ago for South Start and Venture Down Under. And I think we were there for 5 nights and we saw Steve in 4 of them. So every time we're down there, he pops up. He loves startups. He's incredibly approachable. But you know, first of all, I'd love to get your take on Steve. But secondly, yeah. One of his jokes that he made is when he introduced you is that the pay is not that great, i.e. zero. So tell us about Steve and tell us about the motivation for doing a $0 job.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, Stephen is very committed. The Premier is really driven a lot of this concept of Lot 14 was very much at the time of the election 3.5 years ago. There was a real choice. One party was interested in making a housing development out of the old the Royal Adelaide Hospital site, and the other one was Stephen's view, Stephen Marshall's view of turning it into an innovation precinct. So, with the Liberal Party winning the election, that was the way we went. And but what's been amazing, I think, for most people is just the speed at which we've gone from an active hospital to what it is today. And that all a lot of that comes down to Stephen's energy. He's very driven in relation to startups. He sees that as the future. The key to getting more young people to stay and invest and to be the employers of the next generation is to make sure they stay in South Australia and they feel like there's jobs here. So I think he's in his mind he's gone back to the start and said, okay, well, if you're going to start jobs here, if you're going to start companies here, then you'll probably employ here and then you'll stay here and you'll have kids here and then the process starts. So I think his mindset is very much on that. It's very much on getting industry that is really, really interesting. He was very, very keen to get the Space Centre, which is a really sexy industry. It's in its relative infancy here, but I think the feeling is it's going to grow really quickly.
And that's the National Space Centre. This isn't some regional thing. This is the whole.
This is the National Space Agency. You've got literally 50 metres from me here. You've got Mission Control, where you can literally sit back and watch all the satellites who are tracking. You've got the Space Discovery Centre, which was a fantastic interactive news centre. And then you've got the Andy Thomas Foundation, which is a philanthropic foundation looking at putting money into this space research and all things space. And then you've got the satellite. Well, you have the SmartSat CRC, which is the largest space CRC in the country. And then you've got, I think, three manufacturers of satellites. So
you've got Marriott and Fleet and Sabre. And I mean, it's not just the... You know, there's some software in there as well, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and Citel, Italian manufacturers here as well. I met with a group last week who are American manufacturers of satellites, saying they want to come here and bring their capability here. So there's a lot here, and it's what you're finding is once you have one or two start to come, everyone starts to go, oh, what's going on here? I actually had a meeting last week with a US company. It's got a annual revenue of about $150 billion, and those guys were saying, "Look, we just want to get in. We hear Google's there, we hear Amazon's there. We want in. How do we get in?" It was literally as blunt as that. How do we get a spot? We want a spot. So I think there's no doubt this has been the right solution. I think it's provided a lot of energy. I think if there was one concern about Lot 14 at the moment, it's that it's a bit inaccessible to the broader community. It's a bit of a citadel for citadel with a swipe card, I guess. I guess part of that's a necessity in the fact that it's largely a construction zone happening behind us anyway. And so really my job, you asked me what, measure of success. A measure of success for me will always be that the people of South Australia, the people of Adelaide specifically, feel like this is their place, that, this is their ability to come in here. And if they've got a great idea, they can bring it here.
Yeah.
If I could get that message out into the community, then so much the better. I do not want it to feel like this is just a gated community for people, with black skivvies. It's just not. It's going to be for everybody. And that's sort of the push that I'll continue to make. And as we continue to take over some of the, what was the old hospital site and build new buildings around it, I think you'll find that it'll become more for the community.
Andrew, I want to ask you about you in a sec, but we didn't quite get the answer on why you're doing a voluntary job, you know, so $0. What's going on?
Yeah, it's...
That's not very entrepreneurial, so that's not very cheap entrepreneur.
It's certainly not very entrepreneurial. Well, it's interesting. So, and I'll talk more about it a bit later, but I, my wife and I set up a philanthropic fund. We've done very well. We've made quite a lot of money out of just setting up our businesses. And I'm largely run an environmental engineering business, but I also run property development businesses and private equity businesses and a whole range of other things. And we've done really, really well. But my father used to always say to me, he was a great pharmacist, a wonderful man, but a terrible businessman. And he used to think money corrupts all. And so he used to say to me when I was doing well, when my business started to take off, he said, "Andy, above all else to thy own self be true." And so I sort of very much structured everything I do around that. So we got to a point now where I said, well, you know, we've done pretty well. We certainly don't want the kids just to take this and run with it. So we decided we'd set up a philanthropic fund so that we'd put money into a whole range of things in our and it largely focused on South Australia, but not entirely, but largely. And so part of that giving back is part of my role here. So I'm comfortable that for 2 years I just have to put some other things on hold. I'm not sure the rest of my directors is happy about it, but but I put things a little bit on hold and just really concentrate on helping young entrepreneurs get moving, helping pass on some lessons when things get tough, how to get their way through, and also using my network to try and clear the way to create opportunities for everybody. So it's very much my view that, you know, you do well, you give back, particularly in smaller communities, because it's as I said, my parents raised me that's the right thing to do.
All right, well, let's dig a little bit down the Andrew Nunn rabbit hole and tell us a bit more about you. So, like, you are from Adelaide, that's right?
No.
I'm a
Victorian. I'm a Victorian. So I grew up in working class Melbourne in a place called Pascoe Vale. I'm number 4 of 5 boys. And I was sort of the cheeky one who knew, right? We very much were, as I said, sort of grew up working hard for pretty much everything. Dad always said to me, "Andy, if you're going to set up your own business, you got to do something that no one else wants to do." And as it turned out, by 13, I'd set up my first business, which was washing the outside of weatherboard homes that are up for sale. So I got the idea from a guy who came to mum and said, could I get Andrew to, because I was always doing something, could I get Andrew to come and wash the outside of my house? I can't afford to repaint it for sale, but I can afford to wash it. So at the age of 13, I think I got $100 for the day, which I thought was pretty good. So I decided I'd set up a business with my brother, and so we did that, and we were doing that for a couple of years. Just every time a house came on for sale, we'd go and knock on the door, and they inevitably said yes. So we had a great little business running. It was just a kids mucking around business, but it was good. But it taught me a lot about how to identify an opportunity, how to deal with clients, how to go and find customers, you know, and then how to do a job to a level that I could make some more money out of it and then hire some other people. So it taught me some great skills. So that was the first business I did. The other thing that was really informative in my life as a young guy is we used to work in my dad's pharmacy, all 5 of us, every Saturday morning when pharmacies were open between, I think it was 8:30 and 12. And so I always used to be on the counter from the age of 8. I was on the counter. And what that taught me was how to deal with people, whether they were happy or sad or sick or grumpy or whatever. And I just learned how to deal with people and to try and make every interaction a good one. And where that left me was, I was able to, in my later years as an engineer, most engineers spend most of their time talking to their shoes. I was able to sort of sit there and go and deal with clients. And that really helped me in my career. So those learnings I had in Melbourne really helped me set up. So I graduated from a geotechnical engineering degree at RMIT, but when I came out, the recession we had to have was on. And so it was nothing. And the only thing I could get a job in was something called environment. And thought, oh, well, I'll give it a go for a couple of years. So I did that, and then environment just sort of took off. I ended up, as I said to you, I climbed quite quickly because I was able to deal with clients. It was a consulting firm, and I knew how to engage, and that was a differentiator for most of the people I was dealing with.
Yeah.
I ended up spending 2 years living on the in a mining camp in the middle of the Gulf of Carpentaria on a little island called Groot Island, where a mining company had spilled 10 million litres of diesel. So I was up there working on that. And I came back after doing what I thought was a fantastic job, and thinking we were owned by a French company then. So I'm thinking, oh, my next placement's going to be in Paris or London or somewhere. And I got back and they offered me to go to Adelaide for a year. And I went, oh, Adelaide, seriously? Because Adelaide in the late 90s was not the place you wanted to be. But it was okay. After I, got over crying myself to sleep for a couple of months, I worked out that there was actually a great opportunity here. So I started a business here, and what I did is I sold my house in Melbourne, which was my only asset at that point, and I guaranteed 2 guys 2 years' salary to come and work for me. And we started in the kitchen table of my rented unit in Norwood, and that was all. So that was the big roll of the dice. If I stuffed that up, then we were a bit stuffed.
And was that, did that turn into GBS&G?
Yeah. Yeah, right. It did. So
what does GBS&G stand for?
So, Jay, well, it was a merger of two companies. It was, I started a company called Soil and Groundwater, which was S&G, and there was a mob in Sydney called JBS. And we merged in 2015. I'd sort of got to the point by 2015 where I'd sort of done everything I wanted to do. The business was flying, but it was actually really good because I wasn't actually about the money anymore. I'd sort of done it for 25 years, and I was sort of wanted to do something else, but I knew the business was too good just to sell and get out of. Plus my wife got quite sick with breast cancer at exactly the same time. So it all just sort of came together on me. And so I took a merger solution to another guy, and all the accountants listening to this will die at this, but we were making quite a bit more money with quite a lot less staff than this, than the other guys. But the reason I put them together on a 50-50 deal was I love a bit of magic in a deal. I love it when everybody goes, this is great, because we were both inspired then to sort of make it fly. I got a bit of my life back and was able to look after my wife, and the business has now grown from, I think we merged to about 70 people and we're about 350 now. It's a big turnover business. We've got 9 offices. It's a great business. It's a great solid business. And I'm still heavily involved, not in line management, but just in projects as I need to be. But yeah, so that's the story that got me here.
Yeah, and it must have worked for you because you did win the EY Entrepreneur of the Year in 2017. And I think you're still part of that process, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. And I was a judge on that for a couple of years afterwards. I think they love the story of starting on a kitchen table. but I think they love the concept that you risk it all in a way, because I gave a speech today to the Adelaide Uni Think Lab, and I was saying to the guys, do you remember those times when you're so confident in an idea, it's like a poker, and you say, I'm all in. I can't let this fail. I'm betting everything that I can make this work, and then you just work like hell to make it work. And so that was the model, and I think the EY model likes that concept of people that sort of, really back themselves to put it in. So
yeah. And look, and before we move on, because I want to start talking about what's going on in Adelaide, but you are a philanthropist now. So tell us about your foundation.
Yeah, so it's called the Nun Demos Foundation. My wife's Alexandra Demos. She largely runs it. No, I better put that in, I'll be in trouble. but it's largely, we're sort of splashing in the shallow still a little bit about exactly what our philanthropic journey is. My wife's about to open a new philanthropic fund called South Australian Women's Future Fund, because there's no really dedicated fund for women in South Australia. So she's really going to push that. But look, arts is a big component of it. Homelessness is a big component. We do have a big section on kids and education. So I talk to some seasoned philanthropists and they say, you've got two, your remit is too wide. And that's probably true. But it'll be a big part of our journey going forward. We'll continue to contribute a lot of money into the corpus because we just see it as really important part of where we want the kids to go, because ultimately they'll take over the running of the foundation. My view is very much they need to make their own lives and whatnot. I had a real joy in making my life the way it is, and I think they should
Yeah.
I shouldn't take that joy away from them. That they might have a different view, but anyway, that's the way it'll be.
All right. Well, let's talk a bit more about the ecosystem, which is definitely not a bad word, by the way. You suggested it wasn't a good word, but I think it is the accurate word for what we are doing, because there's so many players in it. I mean, you spent a bunch of time in Sydney. You're from Melbourne. I mean, the reality is the startup ecosystem is sort of centered around those two, especially Sydney. I mean, Adelaide is probably in third place, maybe even ahead of Brisbane, but, you know, I probably get howls of derision from the Brisbane listeners in that one. You know, so your options as a state are to either generate talent, which I think you're doing, and I like the initiatives, or attract talent. And I think you're trying to do both, but any thoughts on this and, you know, how you think of it as, is it competitive, collaborative? I mean, how are you thinking about this? The overall Australian ecosystem and your place in it?
Yeah, look, I think Australians in general waste way too long fighting internally. So I take it a step back and I say, firstly, I don't want Adelaide, even the universities and the internal groups in Adelaide, I'm trying to get everyone working together in the same point, because there's really no point in cannibalizing our own markets just to fight each other. So in my mind, our fight's a global one. I don't really want to bring any fights with any particular state. I think South Australia is finally at a point where it's going, we're really comfortable being South Australians. We're really comfortable with what we can do. We don't need to be Sydney or Melbourne. In fact, I think what most people think is our biggest weakness is the fact that we're small. I think it's actually our biggest strength. You know, the ability, as you say, to have the Premier turn up for 4 out of 5 days to give a talk and to catch up with VCs and startups and make sure they're getting what they need out of the experience, make sure they feel like they're being heard and connected. I think that's really important. I think the size allows a lot more collaboration also between those innovation hubs. And so that's where I'm focusing on, is getting that process moving. I don't think our fight is with Melbourne or Sydney. I look at it and say, I suspect there's about 25 million people in the world that talk about Melbourne or Sydney or Adelaide, and I suspect the other 7 billion talk about Australia. And I think if we're smart enough, that's how we should take the game on. So in that sense, I think it's fundamental that we play to our strengths. We have natural advantages, whether they be geographical or geological or technical or even political. We have advantages that we should use to promote the things that we do better than anyone else. And in my mind, that's going to be space, without a doubt. And defence. I think defence is going to be enormous for us. Whichever way you cut it, it's somewhere between $50 and $90 billion over the next couple of decades, plus, on a whole range of defence spending. So, you know, defence logistics and how we maximise that's got to be an absolute focus of everything we do, you know, particularly linked to sort of high-tech developments, modern manufacturing and cyber security is just going to be absolutely enormous.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I was going to ask about we touched on space and you've just touched on defense. I mean, are there other centers of excellence that you either see now or emerging?
Absolutely, 100%. South Australia's always had enormous focus on ag tech. Our wine industry is part of it, but the concept of alternative sources of protein for the world is enormous. So we need to really push our ag tech capability. We have enormously clean water. So the concept of sea-based protein sources and those really need to be developed. We are probably a global leader or the global leader in renewable energy. We've sort of set that standard and in my mind, that's thanks to decisions made in the past. But that decision to move to renewables, probably ahead of the curve, to be fair, is really paying dividends now, because we are seen as a very green state.
And what do they mean? Is it solar? I mean, it's a pretty sunny state, if I understand.
It's a very sunny state. So solar and wind is enormous, but the government, like a lot of governments, are talking a lot about hydrogen, but I think we're a lot further advanced than just about anyone else in getting hydrogen up and going. And that'll fuel, I think, a lot of what we do. I'm very bullish on the Upper Spencer Gulf area for us, which is sort of the Whyalla, Port Pirie, Port Augusta area and north of that. Because I just think there's so much sun up there. We get a little more water up there to sort of tackle some of the issues. I think all of a sudden you'll find that we've just unleashed one of the most productive areas in the country. One from a solar point of view and a renewables point of view, a hydrogen hub will be set up there almost certainly. But I think something that that Adelaide's not really known for, but it will be in decades to come, is our mineral wealth. I think there's about 70 to 80% of Australia's known copper sits here, right? So copper is the metal of the next century. You can make as much renewable energy as you want, but you need to be able to transfer it through copper. And we have an enormous amount of it. The copper, we're fortunate enough, is co-located with a whole range of rare earths and critical minerals that, you know, subject to what's happening with geopolitical tensions, is meaning those supplies are incredibly rare and incredibly important for a whole range of activities. So we, you know, when working with the government to unlock the potential that we have in that Upper Spencer Gulf, because I don't think anyone quite appreciates how significant these opportunities are for this state. So mining will be a very significant part, mining, refining, and I want to make sure we value add to the stuff. This concept of sending ore overseas to be processed overseas, I just want to stop that. We just need to value add to our stuff here. We create jobs, we create opportunities, but we also control the environmental impacts of what we do.
No, so I completely agree. I mean, I think Australia has been such a lucky country. We talked about that before, but I mean, ultimately, a lot of that luck in the last 30 years has been just, or maybe more than that, like finding stuff in the ground, you dig it up and you send it to someone else. I mean, that's not difficult. And you know, I'm encouraged that you touched on all the high tech software, you know, and difficult hardware stuff first, and the minerals came second. And then you followed that up with, we should do something with them before we ship them. So let's, you know, copper ore into copper. Let's ship wires.
Why aren't we shipping pipe and wire? Why aren't we adding value to all the stuff we do? So I think hydrogen and all those renewables become an enormous part of that. I mean, why we're not exporting renewable power in the long term, you know, is beyond me. If you look at the Murray River and how our placement sits along the Murray River, we are geographically perfectly located to do a whole range of things in terms of helping the Murray to be a healthier ecosystem. So we've got some big steps to make in this state. And, you know, I think with a bit of visionary leadership, and that doesn't matter to, in my mind, whatever colour government we have, as long as we've got some visionary leadership that sort of pushes that forward and continues to play to our strengths rather than trying to be somebody else, I think that's really important for us. Yeah. I think that's what we do. We do well when we're really confident, when we're really comfortable in ourselves, that's when we play our best.
Yeah. All right. Look, I'm just keeping my eye on the clock here because I know you've got a deadline. So we did mention this in the start, but South Star has just finished. It was on 2 weeks ago. So it's a terrific conference. I mean, it had a couple of false starts because of COVID, but they managed to pull it off. I think 600 people, you know, as founders, investors, a bunch of other interested people, we all turned up at the National Wine Center, a few other places. Innovation Bay also brought 70 VCs for Venture Down Under. For a 3-day conference. So, I mean, the place was buzzing. An opening talk at the showcase that we put on. So we had 16 amazing startups. I mean, from your point of view, that must have been, you know, you must have been busting with pride and happiness to see all that interest in South Australia. Like any observations after the fact of what was happening 2 weeks ago?
Oh, it's great. It's, you know, the discussions that were had were really, really good because they underpinned the decision or the decisions that have been made here over the last few years. They underpinned those as the right decision. But also the discussions made you think, you know, we're on the right path here. We're doing the right things. We're committing in the right areas. What I loved about it is a lot of the VCs and a lot of the interstate visitors had never been here before. And I think they'd always had this impression that Adelaide was something other than what it actually is. And almost ubiquitously, it was like, oh my God, I didn't even know this place existed. This is unbelievable. And that coupled, as I said, with the energy of the Premier and just the accessibility of that sort of thing was just fantastic. So we got such great feedback that this place have got all the right elements to make it fly. I spoke to a couple of very senior VCs, and I'm going to get them involved in help structure some of the thinking about some of our investment grants and how we run some of our grants here to get, you know, much more impact out of the process we do it. So, you know, we're not above talking to these guys and going, hey, what would you do in this situation? How would you do it? Because what we want to do is just get the best possible outcome for all the entrepreneurs and all the innovators and for all the VCs. We want to make sure that, you know, that they have a fantastic experience here and a fantastic investment experience here. So that's absolutely fundamental to where our goal is as a state and as a department of the chief entrepreneur is to make sure that works. So look, South Star was one of those sort of dreams in a way, because I didn't hear one bad word from anyone. I think everyone had such a great time. I think the food was great. The meetings were great. It was just all great. And
there was so much pent up demand. I mean, people had been locked up, especially, you know, the Melbourne folk I really felt for. They've still got this sort of twitch in their eye about being locked in their house for 4 months. So it was just lovely to get everyone together, like face to face, and, you know, drink some wine and have some fun.
I think there was a real buzz. I mean, you would have felt it a little more than I did because you were involved a bit deeper. But just the level of engagement and just the pats on the back for where we're heading is just I sort of came out of it going, fantastic. All right, so this is what we're doing well. These are the things we need to change. And so, you know, I went straight into the department the next morning and said, okay, so these are the things I want to start having a look at. So this is the advice I got from these guys from, you know, a third party look at what we're doing. So we'd be crazy not to listen to it.
I mean, I mentioned this before, like part of what you're trying to do is to attract people to the state. So let me give you the easy question. I mean, why should a startup or an investor come and check out Adelaide? I mean, what's are there tangible support systems, or is it just a better place to live with nicer people? I mean, what do you want to say about it?
Well, it's a bit of all of those things. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a much easier. So from a livability place, it's probably, if it's not the most livable place in the world, I'll be surprised. But more importantly, I think it's the level of engagement and commitment from the government to try and make the startup community better and stronger. There's just this vision at the moment that we need to be really backing winners. It's okay to back winners. It's okay to put a framework in for everybody to fly, and that's great. But we also need to support those that are doing well. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think we need to, you know, make sure there's a safety net and make sure there's control. But we really need to sort of say, hey, you guys are doing well. Let's help you keep going and hire more people. So why would startups come here? I think accessibility. I think accessibility to support, accessibility to talent. I think like everybody, we're probably struggling as we get to scale. I think we'll struggle without getting more skills. As you said, we need to probably bring more skills and more training in, but that's okay. That's a longer term stretch and a longer term target that we need to start to, is all part of this process of building a really vibrant, strong ecosystem, is making sure we have all that skills training process locked in and driving forward. So I think it's fantastic that we're able to have those discussions. But look, there's funding here. The government's very committed to the funding, good models for this. And I think you'll find that as angel investors are really starting to pick up the concept. I'd like to see more South Australian mums and dads getting involved in the concept of angel investing and supporting their community. There's typically Adelaide in the past, years ago, was very much, oh, look, you know, all the brain drain. Well, brain drain doesn't occur if you create jobs. Brain drain doesn't occur if you create an ecosystem where people want to stay. So it's incumbent upon all South Australians, particularly those who have done well, to reinvest back into the state, reinvest into supporting startups and angel investing in some of these things to get them up and going. So because it just creates activity and creates knowledge. So So the other thing is they get to startups get to come and work with a great chief entrepreneur who's committed to helping them.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, one of the companies in Glexis's portfolio, Alauda, which has got this sort of flying car race series that they're rolling out. I mean, they moved from Sydney to South Australia, and I think there was some incentives, but you know, ultimately, I think it was more Matt and the team just thought it was a better place to attract talent and to work. You know, he's flying to forgive a horrible pun.
I think so. And I think, and you would have felt it when you were here, and I feel it every day here. It's, there's an energy about the place. There's a real can do attitude about just, you know, that a city gets when it feels like it can just about do anything. I imagine Sydney had it when they had the Sydney Olympics and that they had that feeling. Well, it's sort of, you feel that walking around the street here. It's just a general feeling of just, I'm in the right place at the right time with the right people. And now we need to maximize this opportunity and really grow it. So I think it's bloody awesome place, to be honest.
All right. Look, I think that is an awesome place to stop this formal part of the chat. So Andrew, thank you. That was great to get some more insight and find out a bit more about you. I always love doing these because I learn a lot, because I didn't know you that well before it, which is slightly unusual. We do have a quick fire round. So we always try and get some insights from our wonderful guests. So do you want to tell us about your favorite book?
Favorite book would be Red Notice.
That's Bill... what's his name?
Bill Browder.
Yeah. An incredible book. Tell us about that.
Yeah. I read it a few times. I read it years ago and I'm reading it back again. It's just, you know, just all about the opportunistic, guy that sort of, you know, looks at the Eastern Europe and for investment opportunity and just how to grow it, how to take his opportunities. That's what I love about it. Yeah. I mean, it just reinforces, you know, my daily life.
Yeah. I think it was Renaissance Capital. I think he's still running it.
Yes.
Made a lot of money.
It's a true story.
And I actually think it was one of our previous guests that recommended. And I went out and bought it, and I thought it was terrific. In fact, I remember who it was. It was Dylan from the New Zealand Trade and Enterprise. So actually in a similar role to you. In some way. Really? I don't know if you know him, Dylan Lawrence.
No, I don't.
But he recommended it, and I went out and read it. It turns out like my very first entrepreneurial business was called Newsbase Russia, and I was operating in Moscow at the same time Bill Browder was there. And it's not that we knew anyone in common. I mean, I was like this tiny little kid, but you know, our suppliers over there only accepted payment in cash, folded cash. I had to fly over as a 23-year-old with pocketfuls of cash. And then they would only accept the cash after you drank a bottle of vodka and had to go to the toilet of this dingy nightclub to hand over the cash. It was the most bizarre experience ever.
I wonder if things have changed that much. I'm not sure. It's quite an inspirational, you know, I talk a lot about opportunities and seeing your opportunity, making the most of it. And the book is all about just seeing an opportunity and just keep on pushing.
There's some, you know, there's some uncomfortable parallels, like with Magnitsky, that, you know, they basically murdered his lawyer, you know, and there's some of that stuff the Russians are doing with Navalny and a few others that just make you, you know, your toes curl a bit, which is not great. Favorite podcast, if any?
I'm not a podcaster. Sorry, I'm probably in the wrong spot for saying that. I don't. I don't listen to a lot. I'm afraid. Sorry.
Maybe you should start.
No, maybe I will. This will be the first one.
It's like radio, but customized.
Mates who cycle, they love it. They just put on a podcast and just ride, and they love it. So it's dangerous. I ride mountain bikes, careful. So I struggle just watching the trails. I'll make it a thing I add to my list.
Yeah. All right. Cool. And do you have a favorite news source?
I'm a bit traditional. I'm a radio man. I listen a lot to the radio.
You're a traditionalist, aren't you?
I am. I'm showing my age, but I just, I don't know. I read the newspaper and I listen to the radio. Jeez, I've turned into my dad.
Do you still buy the paper version?
I do.
I was going to guess that was your answer based on your previous answers.
It's a bit sad, really. I'll take a long look at myself.
Do you have a favorite tech CEO?
I love, there's a lady on my board here, Flavia, and she is fantastic. So
she was my third guest, I think, on this show.
Oh, really? Yeah, she's amazing. Her passion, her energy, her commitment to what she does but her love of all things family and South Australia is fantastic. So no, she's infectious. She's fantastic. So so I think for a whole range of reasons, other than the fact that she just has a fantastic business that she worked her guts out to make work, the fact that she's just such a damn nice person and just works so hard, she gets my gong.
Yeah, no, she is incredible. I remember I first saw her at a pitch event when I was at Amazon, must be 5 or 6 years ago. I think she was like 8 months pregnant. And she was standing up there talking about this satellite business that, you know, she was raising the first round of funding. And she was like, oh, we're trying to raise $2 million for this. And I'm like, I think you need 200. And I was just, I mean, it wasn't quite right because I hadn't quite got the concept, but I was blown away, that passion and commitment. And then she went off, she has some kids. And then she, you know, before I knew it, she'd raised a bunch of money from Blackbird and Mike Cannon Brooks and a few others. So,
yeah, they're all over it now. Yeah. So it's just a fantastic success story. So good luck to them.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite app?
I'm a Spotify man. Again, geez, that's a bit boring, isn't it?
No, that's good.
Yeah, I just love listening to my music.
Some people say Gmail and things like that. So don't worry.
That's terrible. That even makes me look cool.
Yeah. And what's on your Spotify playlists?
What do I listen to? I don't know. My daughter actually puts it together for me. That's because she's 17. So just to stay cool, she knocks out dad's playlist. So, I think there's a lot of old stuff that I used to like, you know, the Elton Johns and whatnot. There's a lot of Taylor Swift. There's a lot of, Jimmy Barnes and Cold Chisel and that stuff. So it's all a bit sort of music that I sort of grew up with, but yeah, no, it's good. She's a good girl.
Yeah. Jimmy Barnes, great Scotsman.
Yes, he is. Goes well. He's got a good scream on him.
Do you have a productivity tool you could tell us about?
I think my favorite one's the one that works really, really well for me is coffee. that I just, I get my 4 shots in a day and that sort of gets me out to lunchtime. And then I just sort of slowly work it out of the system after that. So I try not to mix it too much with sparkling water because the two starts to affect my productivity. I spend half the time in the toilet, coffee gets me going in the morning, gets my head sort of clear. I do spend a lot of time at sort of 4 or 5 in the morning thinking about stuff. So I'm not sure if that's productive, but I use that time to clear my head and just sort of focus on what the day ahead looks like.
Oh, that's great. TV show. Do you watch TV? If so, what do you watch?
Yeah, I watch a little bit. I'm a Seinfeld man, again, showing a bit of age.
Wow.
But I like it. I like the ability just to sort of switch off, but there's a little bit of humor in the back. Yes, Minister, I grew up watching with my dad. So I love that sort of British, sort of that slightly understated humor. I watch Have You Been Paying Attention with the Kids and a bit of motor racing like Formula One, and that's about it, to be honest. I don't watch a lot of TV.
Oh, that's pretty good. All right, last question, promise. If you were asked to do a TED Talk, what would you talk about?
I reckon I talk about the role I think philanthropy can play in entrepreneurship and innovation. I think there's a key role there. I think there's an opportunity for a lot of people with a lot of money to get involved in really driving innovation, investment, and entrepreneurship through the through appropriately supported sort of government tax breaks method. I really think we need to put a rocket under entrepreneurship and innovation and really drive what we do. I think we're in Adelaide, we're sort of at the top of the OECD for research, but the sort of the bottom for commercialization. So our ability to sort of do better at sort of closing that delta and getting more commercializable research flowing through is really important. So and I think there's a role to play. I think when you get philanthropic money coming through, it sort of says a bit about the community that you're part of. And I think I'd like to be part of a community that's quite philanthropic.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Look, Andrew, thank you all around. And if somebody wants to find out more or potentially get in touch, is there a website what's the best way to approach you?
Yeah, go to the Office of South Australian Chief Entrepreneur, OSACE, through the Department of Innovation and Skills, and by all means, get in touch. I'd love to have a chat to anybody, and anybody thinking of coming around having a startup or a VC coming to have a chat into town, please come and have a chat, and I'll certainly make some time. We'll have a coffee or a lunch and move from there.
Yeah, I'm sure Steve Marshall will probably turn up as well.
I could certainly get him there.
All right, let's leave it there, Andrew. But that was great. Really enjoyed that. And yeah, good luck with it. Let us know if we can help. And thanks everyone for listening.
Appreciate your support. Thank you.